From Islamic Finance News, the world's leading Islamic finance news provider, this is IFN Podcast.
In the aftermath of a global pandemic and the ongoing war in Ukraine, most of the world is bracing for a global recession. But the GCC had been remarkably resilient throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. So, how are current macroeconomic conditions impacting the region's investment landscape? My name is Vinda Tan, the managing editor of IFN, and today I speak with Akbar Khan, the acting CEO of Al Rayan Investments in Doha, to understand what is happening in the region.
I want to start with stating that the past couple of years have been very challenging for the international community for obvious reasons, the pandemic, and now we are facing inflation as well as geopolitical unrest. So most of the world is practically bracing for a global recession. I'd like to get your thoughts or your perspectives on the GCC, which had been remarkably resilient throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. So how is the region coping?
Thanks, Vinita. Great to be with you. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I think the GCC is a very, very interesting place right now. So let's get into it. So I think you mentioned COVID, and interestingly enough, I think luckily a lot of people have forgotten COVID now. Wasn't a great time to be going through, but I think COVID really showed off the region's ability to organize and rapidly react to a shock. There are advantages of being a area where planning is key to the development and the centralized planning. So the GCC, using rapidly developed new technology, was able to actually end up with a world-class solution. I was back in the office in Qatar 5 days a week from October 2020, which is basically testament to how quickly everything was dealt with over here. The world then suffered another shock, which was the Ukraine, which was as a result of the Ukraine invasion. And the issue there was energy shock, energy crisis, energy price inflation, and then food price inflation. So for most of the planet, both of these were debilitating. For the region, energy inflation obviously is a big positive, and so was the inflation of some of the other commodities. They benefited, and that allowed them to subsidize and reduce the impact of the inflation from food and other areas as well. So 2022 was actually a very, very good year for the region. And now, as you rightly say, the world is looking at things in a slightly different way. Interest rates are in the US and Europe have risen rapidly, and China is slower. So the world is preparing for and worried about what may not be a very pleasant 2024. That said, the region, the non-oil GDP growth of the region is probably the more relevant measure to keep track of. And for the larger countries like Saudi, like the UAE, it's growing at more than 5%, the non-oil GDP. And the PMI across the region where it's measured is at or near record levels. So while the world is trying to figure out how worried we should be ahead of for the next 24 months, the region is coming to this in fantastic shape with the great financial situation and with a lot of momentum towards actually the plans that they have ahead of them. And we can talk about that a bit as we progress as well.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that you mentioned that, you know, the region is doing well. So out of curiosity, how are current, you know, macroeconomic conditions actually, how are they actually weighing on the investment landscape of the GCC?
Sure. So the two obvious places to start is relatively high interest rates. So the GCC countries use the United States monetary policy because of the pegged currencies. So interest rates in the US and the GCC countries are relatively high, and that is an issue for a lot of companies and even sovereigns that have relatively high leverage. So that's and it's weighing down obviously on consumer lending activity as well, because the costs of borrowing are relatively high. The other issue is that a lot of the commodities that the region sells go to Asia, go to China, And so petrochemicals, aluminium, fertilizer, commodities like that, where prices were at meteoric highs last year, have come back down to earth very, very rapidly. So that is obviously some weakness. Oil has also softened from the highs of last year, but has remained extremely resilient. And the activities or the actions of OPEC Plus, which is effectively Saudi and Russia with a little help from the UAE, has helped keep oil prices at very healthy levels. The region really, anything above $70-$75 a barrel of Brent crude, and the region is in a very happy place. Last year, $100 plus was really icing on the cake. So while interest rates are an issue, and while the commodity prices for certain exports are an issue, the key commodity for the region is oil, and that's in good shape. And domestic growth, however, which isn't reliant on what's happening around the world, is extremely buoyant, and sentiment is very high. So the global conditions are not weighing at all on the investment landscape from a local sentiment point of view. And also the extremely comprehensive development plans that the governments of the region have are being executed with a great sense of urgency. This is particularly the case in Saudi and to some extent in the UAE as well. Qatar has just come off a very aggressive 10-year process of basically building up the country, and I think it was probably 20 years of plans that were executed over 10 years in line ahead of the start of the FIFA World Cup last year. So Qatar is probably a little bit slower, but that's because they did a lot of work in the previous decade. So I think for a region that is coping with the global macroeconomic gloom, actually there isn't really a lot of gloom in this region.
All right. Before we delve deeper into the investment landscape specific to share investors, I'm curious to know, to you, what are the most exciting growth markets in this region and why?
Great question. And I kind of touched on that. The market in our region, which we are the most excited about, not in the short term, in the medium term, in the long term, is Saudi Arabia. And that applies across asset classes, whether it's equities, whether it's real estate, whether it's fixed income, private equity. The Saudi economy is the giant of the region. We're talking about a $600 billion GDP economy. And for the last many decades, it has effectively, the giant has been sleeping and has now woken up. And the process of the giant in the region, from a geographical size, from a population, 30 odd million people, and in terms of economic activity, that is there is a huge amount of catch up that needs to be done for the Saudi people and Saudi companies and Saudi industry to catch up with what the current demand is. And that is across a gamut of industries, from education and healthcare to housing, where there's a huge shortage, all real estate, actually, with not just housing, but housing is of a particular issue, obviously, for the leadership. Industrial power generation, desalination, there is a development that is happening in terms of increasing oil production capacity by to about 13, 14 million barrels a day, which is going to cost tens of billions of dollars. Tourism is a massive, massive focus for Saudi, both domestic tourism and international tourism, and then religious tourism, where the plans are to grow are very large. And also, for us, actually, the most important thing, which for a G20 economy, the fastest growing G20 economy in the world, is the fact that 50% of the population has effectively been formally re-recognized, which is basically the liberalization of, which is allowing women to come back into the economy. Women are now savers, they are spenders, they are employees, they are now employers, they are business owners, they're active members of society. And having suddenly having 50% of your population coming in and contributing, the effects last over decades, not over quarters. And also there's a generational impact. If I'm a 8, 10, 15-year-old Saudi girl, I'm looking at my mother and my sisters doing very different things to what would have happened 15 years ago. And so the effects are long-lasting and continuing to do so. I mean, latest data shows that in the last 12 months, 1,200 businesses opened in Saudi every day. That shows you the strength of the momentum over there. So Saudi is probably by a long way the most exciting area. The other place which is also very interesting right now for us is the UAE. Dubai and Abu Dhabi have very different dynamics. Dubai is establishing itself very much as a global service hub, in similar to London, similar to Singapore, but the one for this time zone. But also its attractiveness as a place to visit, to do business from, is growing. And yes, Saudi is competing with Dubai, but Dubai is in a different league, I would say, and it's got a significant head start to what Saudi is trying to also accomplish in some of these areas. So Dubai is a big boost. And then also in Abu Dhabi, we are seeing a $100 billion plan to increase oil production. We're seeing a lot of momentum in other parts of the economy as well. So for us, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Saudi are interesting. And Qatar, as I mentioned, is slower now, but in the next probably 3 to 5 years, not in the short term, but 3 to 5 years from now, Qatar will become very, very interesting because they are increasing their LNG output by 2/3. This is a $50 billion project. As a result of this, the GDP of the country will probably go up by 1/3. And, you know, that visibility in economic activity or growth is pretty rare in the world today, so that you know that by so-and-so year you're going to have, and the plan is by 2028, such a large jump. And the country, as I mentioned earlier, has largely finished its infrastructure building plan. So, you know, if Qatar was a company, peak capex is behind us, free cash flow is just going to jump significantly. So it allows them far more flexibility in their plans as to how they want to deploy that capital. It also probably is very positive for a credit rating perspective over the coming years. But also it means that the country is capable of dealing with other shocks or other expansions that it wishes to do.
Absolutely. And you know, the markets that you've mentioned, Saudi, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, it is difficult to talk about these markets without really touching on Islamic finance. So do you see an opportunity for Islamic finance and investment in the current operating environment? And if so, what are they, and really how can Islamic investors best capitalize them?
Great question. And Al Rayan Investment, as you know, is we are part of an Islamic bank, Masraf Al Rayan. So everything we do is Sharia compliant. And, you know, our focus is on both the public equities and public sukuk side. So the Islamic industry is obviously very close to our heart. This year has been remarkable in 2023, that it is the year where we've had the highest ever issuance of sukuk globally. And also in the region. So already for the first, in the first half of the year, or the first seven months of the year, we've had more issuance than in any previous calendar year. And in the Gulf, as an example, that is $21 billion as we speak. About half of that has come from sovereigns, and the rest, which is from banks and corporates. But also within that, what's very, very interesting is that it's showing the maturity of the sukuk asset class as a means of funding. And it has brought a lot of first-time issuers who traditionally have been conventional issuers into the market, whether that's the Egyptian government, which did a sukuk for the first time, or a couple of the conventional banks did sukuk for the first time. We even had a U.S.-based aircraft leasing company, which has billions of dollars of bonds outstanding, and they chose to do a sukuk this year. So not only is that a testament to the Sukuk market overall and how it's continuing to mature, but given that the majority of Sukuk outstanding now globally in US dollars are based in the Gulf, we're seeing both corporates and sovereigns rely more on Sukuk than on bonds than they used to. It certainly isn't going to be a record issuance year for bonds. So there is a greater reliance on Sukuk, which is a fantastic testament to how mature this asset class is and how it's playing a great role in actually being able to take advantage of the growth that we're seeing in the Gulf as a debt investor. On the equity side, it's probably slightly less clear-cut. There has been a raft of IPOs in the region, particularly from Saudi and UAE. Last year, there were 51 listings in Saudi and UAE, which raised $125 billion. And the order books for those IPOs were in excess of $2 trillion. So the demand for investment into the region is extremely high and demonstrates the very positive outlook that not just myself, but others are also looking at when they look at the region. So Islamic investors certainly have avenues to take advantage of this as well.
So far you've painted a rather, optimistic picture about the GCC, let it be opportunities in Saudi, the UAE or Qatar, as well as now we've talked about the really bullish Sukuk market. But as an investor, what are the risk factors we should be aware of or pay attention to?
Great question, and it's something that's always should be discussed as well with the positives. So I think there are a few big ones. One is obviously the oil price. From a sentiment point of view, from a global investor sentiment point of view, the oil price is a key risk, which is why OPEC Plus have been, micromanaging oil production more closely to try and make sure that there is that they err on the side of having less production than more, so that oil prices don't go below certain levels. So I think oil is a fall in the oil price would be a risk. Political stability there aren't any countries in the region where that is seen to be a specific risk. But if something was to change rapidly, given the government setups in the region, and there's a change of leaders or rulers of others, that may have some negative impact. That said, the transitions and the changes in rulers and leadership that we've had in the region in the last decade haven't actually led to any real negatives. They've been handled relatively well. But this is a risk. And frankly, it's a risk everywhere in the world. If you're an investor in the UK, you probably felt political risk was pretty high when Brexit happened, as an example. So it's not just something for emerging markets. Another big risk is execution risk. The more plans you have, the more ambitious, the more complex, the more overarching and comprehensive your plans are across many, many different areas, the greater the execution risk, the greater the risk of making a mistake, the greater the risk of getting something wrong. So clearly, that is a risk to look out for. Individually, no one project is going to derail a country or derail the growth for the region. But execution risk, when you're counting on a lot of the benefits to come from all these projects to come through, if the projects get delayed or there are other issues, that would be a problem. Maybe one thing to think about also is risks to the banking sector. This has obviously been at the forefront of investors' minds globally. And the region has extremely well-capitalized banks, probably overly capitalized, many would say, but from a Western or European perspective, very, very well capitalized. So that is a risk, but we haven't seen an increase in non-performing loans really which cause any worries, even as interest rates have gone up. So again, that would be a risk to think about. And also, as and when we do have tightness in liquidity in the region, and we've just seen this happening in the last few months, the sovereigns, given how strong their position is, are able to actually pump liquidity into the system. So there are a number of risks, but there are also a number of mitigating factors or reasons why some of these haven't been issues, but clearly nothing is risk-free. And one positive risk, I would say, is the steps that have been taken for normalization of relations of countries within the region in the last 3-4 years. Actually, if that continues to happen and the region starts cooperating with itself more than competing with itself, and I'm talking about the Gulf and the broader region around it, that actually is a huge upside risk. I know you were asking from a negative point of view, but that would actually unleash new avenues of growth, which none of us are even considering at the moment.
So I think I have a sense of your sentiments, but for the benefit of our listeners, in your own words, very briefly, what is your market outlook for the region for the next, say, like 12 to 8 months?
Yes, it's always a question that we do get asked, and I think probably my enthusiasm is and positive outlook is you don't have you can probably guess that already. But yes, I mean, we think that of the markets that we focus on, which is the public equity markets and the public debt markets, and Sukuk specifically, we think the public equity markets are well underpinned. The risk is that they probably maybe some parts have run up too much too soon, and some valuations may be running ahead of themselves. But the growth that a lot of companies have already been enjoying, and we think will continue to enjoy in the coming 2-4 years is unprecedented in some areas. So valuation can be in some cases a little bit tricky, but overall we remain very positive because the growth is coming either from government spending directly or as a result of changes in government policy, which are encouraging the private sector to also invest. So that's the public equity side. On the public debt side, look, the credits of our region are in great shape. The region has very highly rated sovereigns, and a lot of the debt, which is publicly listed debt, is some of those companies are related to those sovereigns. They're government-related entities, so clearly they are benefiting from the excess liquidity. But even the ones which are not, the corporates are operating in an economic environment which is very buoyant, so there aren't necessarily risks to their own outlooks. So the bigger question on the fixed income side is what is happening to interest rates, and interest rates in the U.S. specifically, and that is a question which is not specific to the GCC. If one believes that we are nearing the end of the U.S. interest rate cycle, whether we're at it or we'll soon reach it, that clearly is a very, very positive marker for global fixed income, and in which case, if we are nearing the end of the increases in U.S. interest rates, then 2024 would be the year of fixed income. So that would be not just for the Gulf, but for the region overall.
And just before we wrap up, if you can share, how is Al Rayan Investments pipeline looking like? You mentioned, you know, Saudi is a growth market. Are you guys investing more into the kingdom, or what can we expect to see from the firm in the short to medium term?
Thank you for the chance to have a little plug. So Al Rayan Investment, we have two businesses. We have what we call advisory, which is basically investment banking, as well as asset management. On the investment banking side, actually, it's very, very exciting. Our business is very much focused on Qatar. Very, very busy pipeline. There are a number of IPOs that we're working on within Qatar. We expect to see the first one of those during 2023 hit the market, and the second one to follow soon after. There's also other mandates that we're working on with companies for asset sales, disposals. We just worked on, we were joint lead manager on the Darul Khan issuance, which happened very recently. So there's a number of other sukuk in the pipeline as well, which we're also working on. So very busy on the advisory side, and we'll continue to do that. On the asset management side, we're actually While we have been investing in Sukuk for a long time for institutional investors, we are looking at a Sukuk fund so that we can allow greater access to investors which we haven't really addressed as much as we would want to on the Sukuk side, particularly given the outlook in the coming 3 to 5 years for this asset class. And also we already have the largest ETF in the region, which is called the Al Rayan Qatar ETF, which is an ETF which is listed in Doha and tracks an index of Sharia compliant Qatari equities. We're actually looking at whether we should add another ETF to our stable on the passive side. And that is something that we're working on right now. It wouldn't be equities. It's a different asset class. So can't say too much more about it yet, but hopefully we can discuss it when it's closer to seeing the light of day. But that's we have a busy 12, 24 months ahead of us, and we're very excited that the backdrop around us is extremely supportive.
Thank you for listening. For more discussions on the Islamic finance industry, log on to www.islamicfinancenews.com. You can also listen to IFN Podcast on your favorite platforms, including iTunes and Spotify.